Little Princess is having her 4-year-old dance recital out in Chapman, and she's been practicing, and it's at 5 o'clock, and Patty didn't ask if I was going to miss the meeting because she knew I would for her. And so Stu's got something really special planned. If you can come tomorrow, it's going to be really good. And he's going to replace me probably permanently soon. And then Wednesday night, we are reading The Family Afterwards. And it's not a chapter that's read a lot, but it's got so many spiritual principles on how you live with other people. And so the last line of the 12th step is practice these principles in all our affairs, right? Yes. And we think of the 12th step as going to see another alcoholic, but the 12th step is how we practice the principles in our affairs after we've had a spiritual awakening. Like Julie said, you know, her first reaction was, right? I like that. Do that again. That was great. But now we stop, right? And we say there's a different way to react. And so that's been very good. For the new people, we're in the book. We do 3 meetings a week, and we're at different parts in the book. On Saturday morning, we're getting ready to start We Agnostics, and we've been finishing step 1 review by reading from the steps we took, and we covered the book up to more about alcoholism. I just want to read 2 pages here before we start We Agnostics and to finish up our first step. Because remember, it's the first step that drives everything. And for those who are new, it says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash, that our lives were unmanageable. And they left out 2 words, remember, by me. I couldn't manage my life. At the bottom of this page 23, it says, although conventional wisdom says to admit defeat is some kind of failure, it certainly isn't. In fact, it opens the door to success. I can't see a new way of doing things until I admit defeat on the way I've been doing and living. And Julie talked about change. What I wanted to do when I came in here was I needed my life to change. I didn't care how it changed. I wanted to be different than it was. It was pretty bad. And so I had to decide that I didn't want to let go of that old life. And they're talking about unconventional wisdom. And for example, the necessity of giving up, I asked people the question, what is the first thing you have to do if you want to get a new car? It's a good question, right? And usually they'll say something like, go to the bank or pick one out. I say, no, it isn't. The third thing you have to do is give up on the old one. It sounds so silly, but until I surrender and admit defeat to alcohol and admit defeat to running my own life, nothing's going to change. He talks here about step 1 opens the door to step 2 because step 2 says I came to believe that I could change with God's help. And I'm not going to take step 2 until I'm willing to change. If you're not willing to change, you haven't drank enough. Probably. If you're not willing to change, you're not willing to give up, you're not defeated yet. It says he talks about the parable of the prodigal son. And the prodigal son left self, let self will run the show. He took the money from dad. He said, give me my money. He went out and spent his money on wine, woman, and song. Then he got into trouble. And he's down in Egypt. He's eating the husk off the corn with the hogs. But he's telling himself, this ain't so bad. You relate to this as an alcoholic. My shit will probably come in next week or things will get better somehow. But somehow he was given a moment of truth. And I was given that. I know other people were too. Julie talked today. She had that moment of truth, right? When you asked for help and you gave up. And I think that's a gift from God when we get that moment of truth. And it says, no doubt from a power greater than himself. He became able to see reality. He could see. So now he says, I'm in the hog pen. And this really sucks. And there was somebody standing next to him said, hell, man, you've been down there 6 months. But he didn't know he was down there until the moment of reality. I think that's what happens to us. This is very important for me to remember all the time. The reality of my situation when I came in here. The truth that I can never manage my own life and I'll never have power over alcohol. And then he said, the servants at my father's house are eating better than I am. As soon as he had this moment of reality, as soon as he was able to see the truth, he was able to make a decision to give up his self-will. He went back to his father and everything was restored to him. And he could easily have stayed there and died without that moment of truth and insight. And there's powerful meanings in this, because when I was in the hog pen, I was running my life. But God was waiting for me to turn to him. And as soon as I said, I want to get out of the hog pen, God, please help me, things happen. And I have to do that today. I have to turn to God all day today and say, God, I don't want to go back to the hog pen, which is just my self-will. And I want to live with you every moment. One of the things we can't see, we're blocked off from reality, is what our problem is. And he says the first step is really much like the first verse of the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. And it's a blessing to be able to admit that I'm powerless. And when I admit that I'm powerless, then the power can come in. Remember, the rest of the steps are how we let God in and we get rid of the things that are blocking me from him. And God won't come in where he's not asked. And that's what people don't understand. They ask for God's help all the time, and then they block him. And they say, well, why wasn't he there? And the help they're usually asking is self-will help. If we want something fixed this way, we're only going to see it this way. We won't see the other possibilities. When the opportunity to fix a thing another way comes open, we won't recognize it. In other words, when we tell God how we want to be fixed, and I've seen that happen, people come in here and they tell me what they're going to do. They have a plan. They got a wristband. They have no place to live, but they've got a plan. And Sandy Beach says, your plan is never going to work. You're never going to get well unless you give up on your plan and do someone else's plan. Now, AA doesn't say we have the only plan. Some people misconstrue that, but they tell us that they have a plan that will work. So if you want a plan that works, you'll do this plan. And somebody will tell me, well, I have another plan. I said, well, if it worked, you wouldn't be here. And people can't see that. And it says, they need the help of God and other people, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If I admit that I'm powerless and I need help, then I'm going to live in the kingdom of heaven with God all day long if I let him run my life, right? So to me, the kingdom of heaven is in the now. It's if I'm in the now with God, then I've got everything I need. And if I'm the now with Michael, then I have nothing. And I'm full of fear and I get angry and things bother me. And I don't know if anybody else has that situation. I'm probably the only one. If we want something fixed this way, we're not going to see the other possibilities. And we tell God how we want it fixed. That's what a lot of our prayers are. We tell God what we need to think we need to get fixed. And it's just more self-will run riot. And it says, often the solutions to problems are beyond our imagination. Now, I asked Julie on May 17th, 2 years ago, if she thought she'd be sitting here today with her life like this. She couldn't have imagined. She would have settled for a lot of things short of that, right? And we get a lot more than we deserve. It says in the big book, when I look back, the things that happened when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have imagined. I mean, whenever I'm into a little self-pity, I just remember that. I just read page 100, that paragraph. It says this step, he says, when I surrendered to my alcoholism, my life changed in a way I could never have imagined. And people think, boy, being an alcoholic, that really sucks. Well, it did when I was practicing alcoholism. But I was given a solution to alcoholism, and with that solution, I found God. And my life's better than I deserve. This step, the first step, has to be taken 100%. You can't be 90% defeated. I still remember that poor lady who came a few months ago, and she was a mess. And she came on Saturday. She came back Sunday. And on Sunday night, she said, you know, I'm almost 90% defeated, or 98%. I said, well, here's the thing. I saw cancer patients. And if they had 2% cancer, that 2% would eventually kill them. I said, you got to be 100% defeated. And I think that's what happened. People come in here and they're really defeated, but they're not 100%. And their ego regrows quickly and they don't see their defeat. And it's so subtle because our ego is so smart. It knows how to trick us. All the other steps can be done imperfectly at first. The program will still work. But the first step has to be taken 100%. It's like damming up water. If you dam it up 99%, the dam will break. But if the water is dammed up 100%, it'll be forced to seek another way out. And the first step is about surrender. And we were talking before the meeting, they didn't put surrender in the big book because then nobody would read it. We're alcoholics. But surrender is just means you see the truth of the situation. When the soldier is surrounded by 100 people with guns, he can't say to himself, I think I could fight my way out of this. He surrenders the gun. And then the other thing is, he doesn't pick it up. Now, we put the gun down, then we pick it up. And we say, well, there might be a way to get between these two soldiers. And we have to give it up 100%. And so surrender means I'm giving my gun to the other soldiers. And surrender in AA is not just giving up on me, but giving it to somebody else. So who am I going to surrender my problem to? This is an important point. I didn't understand. I'm going to surrender it to God. I'm going to surrender this to that which has all power. And that's what step two says. I came to believe that if I could do that and he could fix me. And so the first step is the only non-spiritual step. I wrote a thing on step zero on the thoughts on recovery. And step zero is when you realize you're defeated, but you're not working the rest of the steps. And then nothing changes. And if you ask somebody if they're working on their fourth step, they're struggling on their fourth step. You hear that a lot. Or I'm waiting to do it. Well, they haven't taken their first step. And the first step drives everything. I took the first steps this morning when I woke up. I said, God, direct my thinking. Divorce it from selfish desires, self-seeking motives. I need God immediately when I wake up. Now, sometimes I'll forget because, you know, I am an alcoholic and I'll think about myself. And then I say, uh-oh, that's dangerous. Because remember, it says on page 86, when we wake up, we make our plans for the day, right? Well, we don't want our plans to work, right? So it says before we do that, we ask God to direct our thinking so that my plans will be in direction with God's plans. And it says, we have to make it alone. Its ability to make it is a grace because there are too many people die without making it. Very few people make it here. A lot of people in this room have made it because they have the grace, they've used it, they keep doing it. But if any of us stop, that grace will go away. And it says, it's finally about facing the truth. You shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. In step one, we're just about to begin getting free. Free of the bondage of self. See, if I stay in and I don't accept the first step, I'm just stuck in my self-will. And as soon as I give up on that, things get better. I'm working with somebody that came to their first meeting Wednesday, and they're already feeling a little better today. And I said, that's because you're starting to work the program. You're starting to get help. And I think God gives us that grace. We continue it the rest of our lives, the more we keep seeking him. It never ends. All right, so that's finishing step one. That brings us right into really the most powerful chapter in the book, and really why the most powerful, I don't know how many pages it is. I didn't memorize that yet. It's 13 pages. And like Father Bill W. said, and if you can ever listen to him on XA Speakers from 1981, a brilliant man. He studied at the Vatican. He was a Jesuit priest. He had a PhD in theology. He studied with Pope John Paul II. And he said he couldn't find God in the church or the Bible, but he found God in the chapter to the agnostic. And this is a very spiritual chapter written by people with 3 years of sobriety. And so I think we should take a moment to reflect on this and how much power is in here. And what this chapter is really saying is the set-aside prayer. It's saying, God, help me set aside everything I think I know about you. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can see truth. We agnostics, page 44. Everybody got it? I'm just going to cover two paragraphs today. And I was at a meeting yesterday and they were talking about something in the second paragraph. And I think I see it a little differently than it was mentioned yesterday. And it's changed the way I see the whole book. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. So they're assuming you're going to read and study the book. And so I believe that the book was written to me, so when I work with some new one, I start with page one. It's here, it was written, it's laid out as a textbook. And you can't start on how it works, because how it works is algebra. And if you're doing math, you have to learn the numbers first. And so, and remember, AA people, we don't want to start out at the beginning because we know a lot, right? So we could start at how it works because we're alcoholics, right? We don't read directions either, right? Alcoholics do two things. They hide illegal substance and they don't read directions. I don't know. That's true for me. Happened the other day. My wife said, "Why'd you read the instructions?" She said, "Honey, I'm still in the program. I'm still learning." We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. So there's a difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic. Now they're going to give you a sentence here, but we talked about the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. The non-alcoholic does not have the phenomena of craving. Now, what does that mean? It means everybody who says they're an alcoholic in this room, if I give you one drink, you'll want a second one. You won't go and buy like a small little bottle of whiskey. You won't buy one beer. If you're gonna drink, you're gonna buy enough. And you need enough, not because your body won't stop with one drink. Normal people don't have that. They wave over their glasses. They leave booze in glasses. I mean, it is offensive, but it's the way they are. Yeah. I mean, and they wave over it. I go on the cruises and people put a wave over there. You know, none of us ever did that. You ever go on an airplane and these people stir these little drinks, they stir, they play with them. Jesus. All right, I'm getting off here. We'll never finish. So an alcoholic has the phenomenon of craving. It's an allergy. It's an abnormal reaction to alcohol. That once I put alcohol in my body, I cannot control how much I take. So if that's true, the solution is not to drink, right? If alcohol, you can't put in your body. So then we have a second problem. We can't control how much we drink, and we can't choose not to drink. We choose to drink. We make that choice, but we can't choose not to drink, ever. Why can't we do that? Because there's something wrong with our mind, and our mind tells me at some point, sober, it doesn't matter if it's a good day or a bad day, my mind will say to me, "Michael, you need a drink. It's going to fix your problems." And I'll go and drink. I won't be able to stop that. Has anybody ever had that happen? Now, the only solution for that is to learn how to live sober and have a different solution for sober living besides alcohol. Alcohol is not my problem. If I don't put it in my body, it's not going to jump out of a bottle and attack me. But alcohol becomes a problem because I cannot live sober. I get irritable, restless, and discontented. I get full of fear. I get shame and guilt. I get angry. I get disturbed. I get bothered. I'm uneasy. And my mind told me, "Michael, if you get a drink, that'll get better." Now, I don't consciously go into the liquor store and say, you know, I'm self-centered, I'm full of fear, I'm angry, I'm separated from God, I'm full of resentment, I have shame and guilt, get me a bottle. We don't do that, but that's what really happens. Because our mind's been trained that when I don't feel well sober, I need a drink or a drug. And so I have no power to overcome that. I can think about it, I can get smart, I can go to have trigger classes for the rest of my life and prevention, all that, it won't work. The only thing that works is God. God will say to me, "Michael, bad idea." And so that's what it said to me today. Bad idea, Michael. I didn't think about it, but if I do, it'll say bad idea. And so I can see the truth of it, but only with God. And so it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. So that means once you start the drink, you cannot quit. You cannot quit sober. You cannot quit drinking. I think a few people here decided they were not going to drink. They woke up one day and they were done. It was a bad idea. Life was a mess. 9:30, praying on their knees, never going to drink again. 5 o'clock, they're in the liquor store. How'd that happen? And we're all laughing because it's true. and we had no power to follow through on our decision. Now, if that's not scary, I don't know what is. Now, it's not scary to me today, but I know it's scary because today I know that I'm going to do this and I have a power in my life that'll work. And it says, if when you're drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're an alcoholic, probably alcoholic. They don't like to label anybody an alcoholic. They want you to decide. The whole big book up to page 44 is for you to decide if you're an alcoholic. If you haven't decided you're an alcoholic by page 44, then we agnostics won't mean anything to you. It's just a, you know, I don't need this. You'll say, I have a power. I'm in charge of my life. If that be the case, so if you're an alcoholic, everybody, most people, we have a guest, new people, they're not sure they're alcoholics or not. They may be. But if you're an alcoholic, then here's the deal. You're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. These are powerful words. So you have an illness that it doesn't, you can do anything you want, but you better have a spiritual experience to conquer this. Now, experience means that you learn something. You have something that from your knowledge and your and what's happened in your life, you have a relationship with something. You've experienced it. And so it's a spiritual experience. It's a relationship with God. Now, if you notice the 12 steps says having had a spiritual awakening, they changed experience to awakening because some alcoholic probably didn't like it. And they wanted to make it so that it could be a gradual thing in some and not a white light thing in others, but it's the same thing. You know, I know that there's a power in my life today that if I go to that power, it will help me. Julie knows it, right? And we know it. And I can't tell you what it's like till you do it. And so that experience and that relationship with God today will conquer my obsession to drink. What could be better than that? So somebody's here saying, well, that's too drastic. You know, I'll go to 3 meetings a week. Or they have a plan. But this is the deal. If you don't have the spiritual experience, and you have to keep it, because we read that last week, it's fragile. It has to be every day. You have to have a daily spiritual experience because alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Now, it's in a damn bottle. How can it be powerful? It's not going to jump out and attack me. It's powerful in my mind because my mind will seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. And I have to have something in my mind that will say, bad idea, Michael. And I have to learn a way to live so I don't get so irritable, restless, and discontent, right? And I can be happy and joyous and free sober. And if you're happy, joyous, and free, then I don't need alcohol. In fact, what I have today is better than anything I ever got out of booze and drugs. I just feel okay today. Feeling okay to me is the highest form of peace. I'm just okay. I'm just okay right in this moment. I used to tell my wife I'm okay all the time. She says, I'm glad, honey. You know. But what I meant was, I'm okay. Okay is very good for an alcoholic, because I used to be never okay. There was always something. And in fact, I wouldn't even know what it was. But I knew there was something out there that I should be worried about, something uneasy. Anybody ever have that? We were uneasy. You know why? Because I was separated from God. And Dr. Young wrote Bill W., and he said that's what alcoholics have. It's a longing for this relationship with something besides themselves that they can hang on to. Now, it says, do one who feels he's an atheist or agnostic, now I forgot, I'm getting old. Agnostic means those without knowledge of God's power. It's not talking about do you believe in God, it's do you know God, knowledge of God. Now, when we come here, a lot of people believe in God, say, well, I believe in God, I pray every day, but I'm drunk every night. Well, because you have no knowledge of God's power because you've never allowed God to work in your life. And we're without knowledge of God, and what we get through the steps is the spiritual experience, and we know God. And so if we know God, then we've allowed him to work in our life. Now, if I know God could work in my life yesterday, then I'm going to use him today. Why wouldn't I? It's something that works. So when I get disturbed, I talk to God. I say, God, I'm disturbed. I'm back in self. I need to let go of this, change the way I see it, and move on. I do it automatically now. I don't want to waste a lot of time being disturbed. It says such an experience seems impossible. It seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster. Now, disaster is not good. So a lot of alcoholics will say, well, it's disaster for them, but it's disaster for me. And it will be a disaster for me. I'm not prevented from, I don't have any magic formula. I just have to keep doing these simple things every day. So disaster, and then it says especially, notice especially, if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Now, so what is a hopeless alcoholic? Well, all alcoholics are hopeless. They just don't realize it, but hopeless means one who cannot recover, this is my definition, one who cannot recover without God. Hopeless means doomed to an alcoholic death without living on a spiritual basis. To be hopeless means that with Alan, the only thing that will give you hope is your relationship with God. So it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death. Doomed is bad, by the way. It means this is going to happen. You're doomed. It's going to happen. You're going to have an alcoholic death. Or to live on a spiritual basis. So there are two doors. Alcoholic death or spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives. And here's the key words, to face. Now, I've heard people say, well, you know, it's a choice. They talked about yesterday, you go to Walmart and you give people a choice, alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. And they'll say, well, of course I want to live on a spiritual basis, right? You know, I don't want to die. Sandy Beach talks about it's that like that show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, remember? You get to ask, you get one call. So he says that you bring the alcoholic down, he's on the game show. And everybody's watching, and he shows them two doors, doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. So he says to the guy, can I make a call? He says, sure. So he calls a doctor, he says, how bad is an alcoholic death? Now, I think this says something else. I think this is the why people die in AA. This is what I think is people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. What it means to me are alternatives to face. Now, I looked up face. It's not in that dictionary. I looked it up. I thought about it. To face. Because they could say they're not easy alternatives. Right? They're not easy for an alcoholic. But to face. And I mean, to me, it means to see, to accept, to face the facts. I have to see in my mind and admit to myself that there's only two choices for my life. I'm going to die or I'm going to do this. And unless you can see that choices, you won't do it. So I think the choice is difficult for us, and we always are looking for a third door. But I think to me, people come here and things are bad and they don't see that either I'm going to die or I better live a spiritual life. They just can't even see it. And I think that's a gift. And I think that's really one of the most powerful lines in the big book. And when you're working with someone and they are fighting you and fighting doing this, they don't see that. If you can truly see that if I don't do this, I'm going to die, then everybody would do this. And if I told a cancer patient, okay, you're going to be doomed to dying of cancer, I'm going to give you a book, and you're going to start on page 44, and you're going to do everything in 102. It's not that much, right? You can lift it up. They do it right away. If you tell an alcoholic, they say, well, I'll start next week. You see, I mean, we do it. That's the nature of the disease. And so I think that that's a key line to me. Doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. And I have to see that every day. Unless I live when, like God said, Ed says, God is in prayer B, right, Ed? We have to, and if I don't change my sobriety, they don't change. And what he says every day, it's powerful, is that unless I do that every day and face that I need a spiritual basis or life, I'm slipping back to an alcoholic death. Now, to me, an alcoholic death isn't just physical. It's a spiritual death. And I'll die spiritually, and I'll live in fear and anger and shame and guilt, and I'll be miserable. It takes a long time to die of cirrhosis of the liver. Alcoholics can drink a lot. We can have wet brain. But we die spiritually, and we don't want to live that way. So anyway, I'm going to stop there, and I hope that this was helpful, and I'm interested in what people think. Thanks again, guys, and welcome to the newcomers.